Hey, how's it going, everybody? Will Kern from Endless Events, and you know it's time for another Event Icons. My gosh, how many episodes have we done so far? And I am just so excited for us to be talking about a major trend waving across the entire industry, bringing the industry together in more puns ways than one. So I'm really excited for this week's guest. We're going to be talking about community. We're going to be talking about the ROI of community, the trends, everything community, and our guest knows it better than anybody I've ever met. So let's dive into it and get started with this week's hashtag event icons.
Hey, it's time for another episode of hashtag event icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share hashtag event icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is hashtag event icons.
Okay, so I can't delay this any further. We got to get in the meat of our content. We got to bring our guest up and online and live. We are joined today by the lovely Erica Bischoff from Campfire Social. Erica, it's so awesome to have you here on Event Icons today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Will.
Well, you're a pro when it comes to community, and we're going to talk a lot about community. But before we do that, I think it's really, like, my favorite question to kind of kick off the podcast is to tell everybody what got you to, like, where you are today. And now, as the founder and CEO of Campfire Social, you know, you decided to create this product based on a need you were seeing within community. So I'm going to let you explain that story. Tell us the story behind Campfire Social and what got you to where you are today.
Sure. I love this because this isn't just a need that I saw. This was a need that I experienced firsthand. So my background is a little different. So I spent the first about 20 years of my career working as a global strategist for consumer packaged good companies such as Kraft, Nestle, Kimberly-Clark. Then in 2015, I decided that I was going to go off on my own and start consulting. Through happenstance, I started consulting for trade and professional associations and event organizers, doing everything from strategic planning to event optimization, and even rejuvenizing dying trade shows. Fast forward to January of 2020, I was hired as Freeman's strategy director, and it was the best job for 3 months because COVID hit. And one of the things that I was able to face head on was this quick pivot from live to virtual, which I'm sure everybody here knows all too well. And so it was a whole new challenge. And I worked with my clients to be able to help them make this seamless transition. But what I noticed were some issues with the long-term implications of how virtual events can impact their membership, their show attendees, and importantly, the exhibitor base. And these different insights that I picked up brought me to go off on my own in August of 2020 to build out what's now Campfire Social.
I love that. I think it's really like just shows like literally how you decided that this was like missing in the market and I'm just going to go out and do it. So to kind of like, and when at that time in your, like your career, when you were kind of seeing that this needed to be built, what were like the big challenges that everyone was seeing when it came to like designing community and why they needed this sort of thing? What sort of stuff were you seeing?
Well, at this particular time, community wasn't the buzzword that it is today. At that time, it was more about that pivot from live to virtual and how do we translate? And at the time, this was the logic was one for one. What happens at the trade show? How does that live and breathe virtually? Well, there lies some of the problems that popped up. One of the biggest problems is the need to involve your exhibitors or your sponsors. These folks are not just check writers that provide necessary revenue, but they actually have great content. And what happened very quickly is that these exhibitors were relegated to more like a directory type of listing within the virtual event ecosystem. And so these virtual or these exhibitors, they're used to controlling the content when they're live at a show. And their holy grail is being able to convert non-buyers into buyers. And when they can control the content, they can now start converting these buyers. But in the virtual landscape, this was near impossible because they didn't have the opportunity to control the content the way that they had been able to. And so one of the things that I saw that really drove me to start thinking critically about not just what was happening today, but the future impact of how we were transitioning to virtual had to do with this exhibitor base. Because the exhibitors, to me, are so impactful because of this content ability. When exhibitors decide that they don't get the value, they leave. And when they leave, they often take their delicious content with them. And show attendees, association members, they love exhibitor content because it's usually the latest and greatest thinking, the newest trends, the innovations that come to life in any particular industry. And when you lose exhibitors, you lose attendees, you lose members, you lose engagement. And so I would say going back to 2020, the world, they started to see some of these issues come to life. And then came community. And a lot of the communities that existed were mainly focused on a member engagement. But, and you'll hear this theme over and over and over again whenever you talk to me, it's about engaging your exhibitors. You cannot forget your exhibitors when you think about community engagement. Community should represent everything from your attendees to your members to even your staff, student involvement, any ancillary groups that touch your organization, but also importantly, this exhibitor base as well. And so the communities that existed weren't really focusing on the exhibitors. And so we created a new model that leveraged your exhibitor base to actually help grow your attendee base and your membership community.
Ooh, I like that. I think we'll talk like a little bit about like potential revenue models when it comes to exhibitors. Yes. But like everyone, I think, is super excited about this because like right now, exhibitors are at a very like fragile space, right? Like when we're going virtual, everyone like convinced a lot of their sponsors to come over, but then sponsors and exhibitors didn't see the value in it necessarily. And, you know, right. I think there's like, and then now they're like, oh, should I come back to be an exhibitor again? I think everyone's kind of like in this kind of like limbo mode that could be potentially scary for people. And that's scary because I know many planners that almost their entire event budget is based on exhibitors. Like, you know, like the attendee revenue is like almost a nice to have rather than a must have.
Exactly. And in this post-pandemic climate, many shows are seeing 40 to 60% capacity, which is normal. We're slowly getting back to where we'll be. But exhibitors come back thinking that they're going to be, you know, back in front of their ideal audience. They show up this year, they're seeing this reduced capacity, and they're like, is this worth it? And so the thing that we as a group in the exhibits industry need to start thinking about is, again, not just what's happening today, but what's the impact of this? Mm. Are we going to start seeing attrition when it comes to your exhibitor base at next year's show and in 2 years from now? And the fact that COVID is not going away by any stretch. So how do we preserve these relationships and make them truly viable?
Mm. Well, talking about the future, you know, I normally like to talk trends like at the end, like at the future, but I think that you're going to have so many of them that I think that will get people thinking and asking questions, which, by the way, audience right now watching live, ask questions away because that's what this show is all about, is answer your questions, because that's what Erica's here to do, is blow your minds. But let's talk trends really quick. What sort of big trends are you seeing? You know, everyone knows about the community trend. If you don't already, go check out a blog on Endless, or I think we've done Event Icons episodes about it. We've done Event Tech podcasts about it, Event Brew episodes about communities, like on everybody's tip of their tongue. But let's talk about like, what are your big trends that you see affecting community moving forward? Like what big ideas and things are brewing in the pot?
Right. So I would say that there's actually four big trends that, you know, I'd like to share with you all today. The first being is this whole idea of this integrated community, where it's not just about, you know, a place for your members to ask questions and get them answered. It's a place that becomes a social network for your entire ecosystem to be able to come together, to network, share content and even use that to and leverage that content to forge commercial relationships. So that's one. The second, and this really applies to the for-profit show organizers, and this it's this whole idea of a year-round membership model. When you have an effective community or professional network that you can bring everybody together, you can start creating a membership model out of your attendees. So now instead of just touching those attendees for 3 to 5 days every single year, you can start selling subscriptions so that they can get access to the networking, all the delicious content, and even access to the all the providers that service their industry every single day of the year, because that's what people want. They want to be able to access folks within their industry at any given time. I'm going to deviate for 1 second to talk a little bit about LinkedIn, because we all tend to turn to LinkedIn to be able to have that connection. But the truth is with LinkedIn, there's a lot of noise. I publish articles and I'll get likes, but it's usually from people that may or may not be a part of the events industry. And the events industry is who I'm targeting. And so a lot of good content that should have legs kind of get lost in that giant sea that is LinkedIn. The benefit about having smaller professional networks that are designed for just a particular event or just an association or just an industry vertical or even a corporate landscape is that those conversations and the people that you get to network with are truly within your industry, and people will pay for that. And so that is something that we've been working on with our clients in terms of being able to monetize your attendees year-round with your professional network. Another big trend, and this one is probably going to perk up everybody's ears right now, it's this whole idea of truly integrating community with your events. It doesn't matter if it's a live event, if it's a virtual event, but it's not just thinking anymore about engagement and interaction as silos. I tend to see from the clients that I used to work with, and even potential clients for Campfire Social, that people are used to silos. So we've got our virtual events here, we've got our live events here, and we've got our community here. And the truth is, we should be having a hybrid approach that all interweaves together. That's the most effective way to breed engagement. One example to just illustrate what I'm talking about with baking in your community with your events is letting the event content drive community discussion. So imagine this. Imagine you're at your event and you've got speakers that are presenting, whatever topic it is. I'm holding, a pencil right now. Maybe it's about, lead manufacturers. You can leverage what that speaker's talking about to create a group right on the spot and encourage people to come right in to that particular group to carry on these conversations. Or let's just say there's, maybe a networking event and you hear different topics being talked about. Add those into your community in real life and encourage your attendees to be sharing those conversations in real time. They can also be posting things like pictures of them, reconnecting with their colleagues. It could be ways for, when they meet exhibitors on the show floor to be able to continue those conversations and not have to worry about remembering somebody's business card or, if they don't even want to share, any their personal email or phone. You can leverage your community to allow those relationships to really take hold and grow. But I love talking about the aspect of letting your event content drive your community. The beauty of a well-designed community or professional network is the ability for you to get data and analytics around these conversations that are happening. And, Will, I actually think data and analytics should be its own separate question because there's a lot of thoughts there. But when you get your event attendees talking about the content that exists at your event, and you can collect social listening. So the trending words, trending hashtags around that content, and even the behaviors that people exhibit in terms of what types of posts they're liking or where they're commenting, you can get a really good feel in terms of how effective your event truly was. And most people leverage post-event surveys, but most people are in this euphoric zone after being able to see people, especially now for the first time in forever. I was at an event in December and it just felt good to see human beings in real life. And so people are willing to say, yeah, this was amazing. This was great. But the proof comes based off of their actual behaviors, and you'll see that through their engagements in your community or professional network. So that was three. And the last trend that I'd love to bring up is this whole notion of the community model. So right now, there's a lot of technology at play in the events community, in the events world, which I love, because having joined the events and association world back in 2015, I've been able to see how it's grown until now. And the truth is, back then, there wasn't a whole lot of innovation, but there is today, which is so exciting for our industry because we need it so badly. And so with this plethora of different options, you've got the ecosystem approach to building a community or an all-in-one. And so there's different options for different organizations based off of what the needs are. And actually, Will, I think this is a whole other conversation as well, to talk about the ecosystem versus all-in-one, because this all boils down to your strategy. And I think we should talk about strategy too. So there's a lot.
You're just like making this perfect transitions for me right now.
Happy to.
Okay. Yeah. You have I have a zillion questions because this was all such great stuff. Where to start? Let's start. I think, definitely we'll come back to data analytics and what data analytics that we'll do for community. I think also talking about, how do we actually engage with people, I think will be really, really important. But yeah, let's talk about that larger strategy. What do you think the strategy of a community, and let's talk, I guess the example we'll use is probably the most common one, that you have an event existing right now. Because let's assume if you have an association or something like that, there's a lot of easy parallels to make to this and stuff like that. But let's talk about the person who doesn't have an association. They have a big attendee base, 1,000 people come to the conference every year. Yeah. This year they're down to 600. They're trying to figure out a way, I want to keep these people engaged year round. I want to make it more obvious that when we're going to sell our conference, I have a way to directly reach them without having to spam them on email or, hound them down or provide them a bunch of ads. What's the strategy for that person who's planning an annual event to create a community around it? What's the strategy behind that?
Right. Well, first and foremost, and this is me putting my strategist hat on. This is from my many years of doing this on the corporate side and association side. It's first understanding what strategy truly means. Back in, when working with some clients, people have come to me saying, well, we need a content strategy. Okay. Right. We can create a content strategy, but you need your overarching strategy first. And a true strategy balances your organizational goals against your stakeholder needs. So the first step is to start asking your organization questions in terms of, what do we even need to be accomplishing? Although we create private professional networks, and I'm all for everybody, having their own community or professional network, I'm going to ask you to hold off until you come up with a strategy. And some of the key questions you should be asking your organization are things like, do we need to attract younger generations? Do we need to address sponsor churn? Do we need to diversify our revenue stream? How do we remain relevant in a virtual world where people are still remote? Yes, we've got our live events, but this is still a virtual world that we're living in. And this virtual world competes with everything the events world stands for, because we're all about live, meeting in person. And so we've got to come up with a way to mesh them together. And is business continuity an issue? I've looked at many 990 reports throughout my career. And the one thing that's been consistent is a lot of organizations put about 60 to 80% of financial risk into one live event. And my assumption is it's probably, I mean, it's higher with event organizers in the for-profit space. And so these are real big business issues that we need to think about. So with that being the case, how do we blend this whole idea of community? Do your stakeholders want community? Do they want this touch point year round? What matters most to them? Is it networking? Is it content? Is it commercial transactions? Because if you know what your stakeholders want, now you can start balancing it against your organizational goals. And why this is so important is there's different types of communities. There's different professional networks that can address these different needs. I was on a sales call not too long ago where somebody was talking about how they like a particular format of a community, which I'm like, okay, that's great. We should understand that first. But then when I started asking questions about what are your business goals? Well, one of the biggest business goals was to attract millennials and Gen Z. Okay. So when we think about millennials and Gen Z, there was actually a study that I recently read. I'm happy to share the link with anybody interested, that said 7 out of 10 Gen Z say that they never have to meet a person in real life to forge a meaningful connection, which is a terrifying stat for the events industry, because we need to make sure that we are bringing people that are starting to age in, because we've got people aging out and we need to be able to maintain our levels of engagement and those attending our events. So, okay, we know that, but then there's more to the story. If these folks can meet virtually in a safe place that they're used to, like they're used to being on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, where they're sharing content, consuming content, and using content to build relationships, they can build these relationships in a way that they're used to experiencing it, they're more apt to want to register to attend an event live to meet these people in real life. And this is a really powerful fact, an important fact to understand, because if that's the case, we need to make sure that we're providing them with an interface that matches what they're used to, what they're comfortable with, something modern that looks and feels like a social network or a professional network. And so that's just one example of how you can balance organizational goals against, against what your stakeholders truly want and need to make sure that you're getting the right tools for them. And so that's the start of creating your strategy. And there's more, and
there's so much more to dive into.
Yeah, there's so much. It's like we need like a 5-hour podcast, but nobody.
5-hour podcast. All right, be prepared, everyone. We're going 5 hours today. Let's go.
Oh, you forget your glass of water. You got to bring like a whole meal with you.
That's why we tell you to bring a glass of water just in case. Right. But no, it's I think it's such a good point. Like it always goes back to these like original ideas, like understand your attendee personas and everything like that. But right. I think you bring up this really good point that like, you know. Community is such a big, important part of what we do because, you know, everybody's looking for ways to keep developing relationships online. And I think one of the big trends that we're starting to see, too, is that it's really interesting, I think, what's happened over the last couple of years. I remember like when, you know, Facebook was coming to power and then like Instagram was the new hot thing and then mm-hmm. Snapchat was coming out and, you know, LinkedIn's been around forever. Yeah. And, you know, obviously Twitter has been around forever. And then, you know, TikTok comes and like it. What I'm noticing is that like there's always going to be like every few years is going to be another platform that pops up too.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny as marketers, like I saw a HubSpot report that said like how many people are planning to increase their amount of engagement or work in these different platforms. And, you know, I feel like that's always going to be the question marketers are going. It's like, where do I go where my audience is and how do I chase them? When in reality, like, we're trying to figure out how do we bring them into us and how do we bring our audience and keep them around us all the time.
Right.
You talked a lot about engagement, and I think that's like the number one issue I hear from planners is how do I drive audience engagement? And that, you know, that might be a separate conversation for actually within event. But then you just followed up with like, how do I do the post and pre-event engagement? And that's what community is supposed to solve. Right. And for, I think a lot of people, they're like, yeah, we'll just like build a community and it will just do itself.
Yeah. No,
you know,
yeah,
what,
no.
What
it's,
is,
it's hard work. I think people forget, and especially having built a professional network, you really forget that LinkedIn was not built overnight. Mm-hmm. Trust me, as a startup founder, I wish, you know, things were built overnight and they take off, but it takes a lot of work. I want to go back to one thing that you just mentioned, Will, and it's that whole notion of why can't I get engagement? The number one reason why I see that people don't get engagement is they're leveraging the wrong platform for what their audience needs. That is a huge start. If you don't have something that feels relevant to your audience, they will not use it. Or if it's too feature heavy, they won't use it. You have to understand what your users want and then they'll flock to it. But in terms of growing a community, it can take years. For our clients, we talk about that they should not plan on building their community for today. You start building today for 3 to 5 years from now. That should be your goal. Is you start building, you start laying down the seed, the foundation to get more people talking and more people talking and more content. And you start learning and you look at the data to understand exactly what works, what doesn't work. And you just keep cultivating this. And then year over year, it grows because the more conversations breed more users, that breed more content, that breed, quite frankly, more exhibitors, more revenue, if you want to monetize your community. And it just keeps feeding itself. I think personally, if you build a community and you have about a quarter to a third of your audience just on your platform in year one, you're probably doing a really good job because it takes a lot of work. We've written playbooks in terms of how to market your community, how to grow it, how to onboard users effectively, how to onboard vendors to your community effectively. And these strategies do work to get more people involved and participating. But you also need a good community manager. Just like you wouldn't leave marketing up to just automation, you want a good marketer. You want a great CMO that has vision. It's worth the investment in having a community manager that has vision and has, you know, the skill set to get people engaged and excited to participate.
I like that. Yeah, definitely. I think the community manager is like a big key role. And that's one thing I'm learning about building like a community is that like I don't want to say it's like a full-time job in some ways, but it's a full-time attention. Like it needs to be that this is like everything that happens within it needs to have a single person that it can go to, because like a lot of it is them engaging on every comment, right? Like for example, if Sarah leaves a comment on the main home feed, like right. I need to within 24 hours at least show some excitement in the comments to kind of build that engagement, just be that cheerleader in a lot of ways. Well, a lot of people start to think about like, okay, well, this thing that I thought was maybe just a software cost now is becoming a people cost as well, you know? And so what sort of like costs do you think that people need to be thinking about? And I think that eventually what I'll get to after this is we talk about like, how do we see what the ROI of these things are? And you've had a couple of clients that have had pretty impressive metrics in terms of ROI, but talk about like the cost. So we have a community manager, we have the platform that ends up happening. What sort of other things should people think about when it comes to the costs or the elements of a community?
Yeah, it's generating meaningful content. And many organizations are very fortunate to have, you know, content creators within their organization. But there's ways to offset those costs too. So if most vendors, and so again, going back to this whole notion of integrating your exhibitors, they're incentivized to produce good content because they can leverage content to build relationships that encourage networking, that give you more data to understand how people are talking, what they care about. And you can leverage these exhibitors. That's why they're so powerful, to be your content creators that can just help feed your ecosystem. So, you know, there are these big expenses, but if you plan and strategize, you know, very thoughtfully, you can monetize your ecosystem where it shouldn't actually cost you a dime.
I like that a lot. Like, That's what we try to do at Endless was like, for example, we're doing Event Icons right now live. We normally, this show has always been going to social networks for like as long as it existed because like we just go everywhere everyone is. But what we realized is like, we'll also live stream this to the community. We'll also live stream the back behind the scenes recordings. Like we actually, Event Brew and Event Tech Podcast originally just recorded behind closed doors. And we kind of liked it that way because Event Icons requires a lot of like energy to be on camera and everything. But then I was like, okay, we'll just do video, but we're going to make it super casual. Like Will's not going to be in Endless swag, you know, every single time. It's going to be, you know, and what we did is we just live streamed the recording of it. And I bet most people have a podcast that they're already recording. So just live stream that to your community and, you know, post the links as part of like a library of content. You probably have tons of webinars. Do the webinars inside the platform, you know. I think most people don't realize how much content they're already creating. So if you're like an inbound organization or a content marketer already, like it's going to become easy to at least get a weekly 1 to 2 pieces of content on it. But I love the partner piece. And that's what like where we tried to like focus on too with our community was like, let's bring in software partners. Let's bring in other event management folks. Let's bring in influencers and say like, who wants to create content? Because like, let's be honest, if it's all within your community and everyone's already in it, and like, let's say you've decided to do the paid model, and we'll talk about revenue in just a second. Like now these people are paid for it. Like almost who cares if the content actually comes from your company, because you're the one who gets to control all the interactions. You get to control this experience. And as long as it's aligned with your vision, right? Like I think it can be huge. Like,
Well, that's where the beauty is, you know, being able to allow your users to almost toggle between being, you know, Erica Bischoff or Erica Bischoff of Campfire Social, because, you know, I might want to like a post or maybe share some big company announcement as Campfire Social, but you know what? I want to write thought pieces from me, and I want to share it because I want to be a part of the community. I'm not looking to show my company's peacock feathers, you know, all in one fell swoop. I want people to get to know what I can bring to the table, and maybe that'll lead to business. But if not, I'm building new relationships where I can learn from others as well.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk about like revenue opportunities, because this will lead us to the ROI math equation, right? You take revenue minus expenses, and as long as it's in the green, you're looking good at least some sort of ROI, right? But like revenue opportunities. So you've talked a little bit about year-long membership fees already, so that's a potential.
Which can breed a lot. You don't have to charge much to be able to generate meaningful money from these year-round membership fees.
What's a good, like, what do you think is a good amount that people should be exploring on? Like, cause that's a big, like, should I give it away for free or should I charge for it kind of conversation,
Give it away for free. People need skin in the game. So, there's, a B2C show that we are, talking to right now. And one of the things we suggested is charge $10 a month, $15 a month per person. Okay. So you're looking at, you know, if you charge $10 a month, right, $120 a year. Well, they have 10,000 attendees. That's some real money. And you don't have to charge much, but just think, as a user, for $10 a month, I would love to be with my peers around a particular industry or topic that I'm super passionate about. It's not much money, and it's something that can really be additive for an event organizer.
I like that. So, okay. So, you know, okay. So we have potential revenue coming in from the attendees. I'm guessing upsell opportunities too. Like you could sell them to go to the annual conference too, on top of the membership fee. In terms of revenue,
you can drive registration. So there's a stat that I love from ASAE, and it just shows engaged attendees spend 6 times in drive event registration. So of course there's overt ways to generate revenue, like membership model or charging exhibitors for access. But there's also organic revenue that comes from proper engagement. You know, maybe you've got, you know, a subset of folks that maybe don't attend live events, but because they've enjoyed the content and the networking, now they're going to become first timers that register because they want more from your organization. And they're, in and of itself, it's worth cultivating this audience outside of your event. So you've got that. From like the other opportunities to generate revenue, I take this from my live event playbook. It's co-locating. We were talking to this one publication, And they do a lot of partnerships with small associations. These small associations really can't afford their own platform, but they can come together and co-locate. So now that big publication is able to charge these smaller associations a co-location fee to be on their platform, which ultimately creates more users, more eyeballs. They're charging their exhibitor base to be able to come on the platform and create listings and post as a brand that they can charge for all these different opportunities, but it makes their post so much more valuable because now there's more eyeballs looking at it too. And so this can become very powerful. And speaking very specifically about monetizing your exhibitors, I just want to be clear, I am not talking about banner ads. Personally, I know this isn't popular, but I'm not a fan of banner ads because they get forgotten, they get ignored. It kind of just blends into the background. What exhibitors want are true digital marketing opportunities. Their brands are spending money on Google and other social platforms to get to a targeted audience. But your organization has that already because you've already cultivated this industry group or affiliation that you can start charging. You can charge your exhibitors for these sponsored posts that could look just like a sponsored e-blast that you might offer them as a perk. But now it's at this other touch point in the community that's reaching more folks in a very targeted way. And it's worth money to your organization. It's silly to leave this money on the table when you can do it when it's thoughtfully done on the right platform.
I'm there with you on the thoughtfully done. Like, let's keep it classy, everybody. Like, I actually love it classy. I love your opinion on banner ads. I mean, to be honest, sure, you can technically sell a sponsor on banner ads. They will probably buy it and they probably will turn to revenue. Some people won't even ask for it. But to be honest, does it really, really work? And that's the challenge with it. Unless you're like really driving. I mean, if you're for that 10,000 person event, a banner ad can have some value. But like, let's be honest.
We're a big brand.
If you're
brand X, you know, nobody's seen you, you'll get an impression, but it might not be lasting.
Yeah.
That brand X has to do way more.
Well, you've also like, I think around exhibitors and things like that, also like creating, I think, different tiers is also like important. And that's like a strategy that you and I have talked about in the past too, of like, you know, almost like we have the gold, silver, platinum packages we're used to. Right. Like, you know, there's different levels in which you can do this, but, you know, you can also piecemeal it out in a lot of ways too. I think there's a lot of like excitement. And obviously I think like some exhibitor add-ons depend on the platform that you're using and things like that as well.
Right. One of the things that organizations can do, if the platform allows for it, it's even providing them data. And I'm not talking about personally identifiable data. You're not
no email list. Like not like no, that was no, the question. I was like, what's no, your fit? No, are you a fan no, of the, we'll share the
no,
list.
No email list. You don't need to do that. What exhibitors really need, especially because there's far more mom and pops, more small to medium sized, you know, exhibitors out there than the large scale ones. It's giving them data to understand how to be effective digital marketers on your platform. For example, you let them post resources on their pages, right? Could be, you know, PDFs, white papers, video demonstrations, photos of their products. What drives the most clicks? Because what that's going to do is it's going to teach them, okay, I need to put more content like this on my page. And, oh, maybe I should post this in the feed because it's going to generate more conversation. And when you do this, when you provide this kind of data back to your exhibitors, and they start using it to generate more conversation, you get more data back for your organization to understand what people are talking about. That leads into things like social listening. What I mean by that are keywords, trending hashtags, that you can provide those to your exhibitors. They pay money outside of your organization to understand what's trending. So monetize this. Let them bake in some of these keywords into their profile so they can stand out to, you know, their ideal buying audience. And they could even create content that is relevant because they're using the right vernacular that resonates with their audience. It's not really about just, you know, giving away, you know, the farm of, you know, my name and email address. It's more of teaching them how to fish. how can they leverage their content to make these relationships on their own? And then if Will, if you want to give me your name and email address, great. You know, your exhibitors will win in the end.
I like that. Yeah, I'm definitely like not a fan of the email lists. Like I'm basically at the point of like, can I shut in myself out from the world as much as possible to just no longer get spammed in any sort of way?
People don't want to see all these peacock feathers. Mm-hmm. They want good content. And if there's good content, they'll work with you as a vendor.
I love it. I think I have one last potential revenue opportunity too that like, I think like it kind of like is obvious, but then like, I think most people don't realize this too, is that like the opportunity is also for these communities, for brands directly to build communities for their brands, because like it's getting harder and harder to reach people. It's getting harder and harder to, you know, especially if they aren't actively reaching out to you, it's harder to like talk with them. Like this shows in how much people are hating direct messaging on LinkedIn, shows with how much people filter out email. My iPhone is set to ignore any calls that are in my contacts. Right. If you get a text, it looks, you know, it's someone you don't know. Even if it says, hey, how are you? You're like, is this someone trying to fish me to like get me to renew my car warranty? Who knows, right? So I think there's also this opportunity that you can build a community to become a communication channel for your sales reps to not like do spammy like sales, but like to start building relationships with prospects as well.
You create a community of commerce where the whole intention is to share new innovations, new big ideas, you know, hear from, you know, current customers that say like, I really loved this widget. Like it really, you know, works well, and let people talk about these products and services.
I love that. So to ultimately get to like, so there's some revenue opportunities in terms of exhibitors, in terms of monetizing your attendees. Chances are these are all like new opportunities that people didn't have in their revenue standpoint. And I know, I don't know exactly what information you can share because you have so many awesome clients, but like when I've heard from you, like you guys have had some like pretty impressive ROI numbers on it. So maybe even if you don't share specific numbers, you can share figure numbers at least, but like to show like how impactful this can be, and you've done an ROI calculator too, which we'll link as a resource down below, but like some of these ROI numbers are just like, these are like major amounts of revenue that could change a business. Can you talk through like what these ROIs look like for people that are looking to build communities?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just say, anybody that wants to reach out, like I love talking strategy. Yes, I'm the founder of a company that makes professional networks, but I'd love just to talk to you. All of my client calls, I usually do a model for them just to understand the potential of how much revenue they can take in. And of course, everything depends on the size of the organization, how many exhibitors you have, how big your audience is, because it'll determine how much you can charge. But we've modeled anywhere for, you know, let's just take like a medium-sized organization, anywhere from $500,000 a year, all the way up to, you know, larger organizations that can generate $1.8 million a year. That was one organization. We had one that we modeled $6 million, that this was a behemoth, that they were actually planning on being able to take in from this new type of digital marketing assets. What we can do is open up a whole new stream of monetizable real estate that you can offer your exhibitors or vendors or sponsors that they're paying elsewhere for. So those dollars can just, again, shift back to your organization. But it really depends. We've got, you know, one organization that, you know, we've modeled, I think it's like $650,000 in year one that they're planning on taking in. So it really just depends across the board. Smaller organizations could be $250,000. You know, it just depends, but it's real money.
Yeah, it's real money. That also, like, one of the most interesting things about this too is that it's not replacing revenue you are seeing, it's enhancing the revenue, right? Like, yeah, like it, if you're doing $1 million on your conference, if you can add $250,000 with obviously some effort, but like, you know, when we were talking about costs, right? We said like you can get the content for stuff you already have. If you do an annual conference, you probably have like recorded content for the rest of the year already set up. If you know, if hiring a community manager, you're not going to need like an MIT genius to like be your community manager. You need someone who's passionate about your community that you're going to do. Like, and the platforms, like I'll say now, because I've shopped for so many different platforms, these aren't like multi-million dollar. They don't have to like build the next, you know, Facebook. These things already exist, and they're really relatively simple when it comes to costs.
Right.
And, you know, you can get true ROI from this. Yeah. Like within your first year.
Exactly. And just think it grows year over year. More content leads to more exhibitors.
Yeah.
And more users.
And as long as I think you have a good like community engagement strategy and you have someone who's focused on it, that's the biggest challenge I think I see from people is like, they just don't focus 100%. They're like, we're just going to kind of do this on the side or, you know, like, or we'll try to just move it all internally. And it's like, well, no, like sometimes you have to bring some resources in to do this.
Right. Which is awesome. Wouldn't it be worth spending 50 grand a year on a community manager to take in a half million?
Oh my gosh. Like that, that's a 10X result all day. Like I'll take those.
How do you not do that?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I think we're both on that team for sure. Right. If anyone's out there wants to disagree with us, you can always, you know, do it in the comments and we'll be happy to hear from you. Well, we're getting to the end of time and I want to make sure that we're respectful for everybody hanging out here. And I know you got a ton more resources that you want to share. So, you know, for everybody who, you know, what resources, books, blogs, sort of things are you using to like digest and understand community? What sort of stuff do you have to share with the audience?
Yeah, so I like to write articles, and this is my own little self plug. If you go on campfiresocial.io, we have our own blog, and we can include that link. But to be honest, I'm a big researcher. I love learning from my peers. I think the best resources are listening and just talking to your peers. What works? What doesn't work? And try to see what makes sense for yourself. I mean, there's books out there. There's articles. I mean, HubSpot has a multitude of articles that are great to find stats here and there, but really the richest source is just talking to your friends in the industry, because you can learn a lot and start collaborating together.
And so true. I think like a lot of ideas come from just like this stage. And I think that's one of the exciting things about the community is it's like kind of a little bit of the wild west right now on there too. So I love that. Definitely check out your guys' blog. It's awesome. Tons of resources. And what is the one tip that you could give planners today to take away when it comes to making their events awesome?
I would say just don't forget the power of your exhibitors beyond the fact that they do help, you know, feed your bottom line. There's so much value that you can pull from them and that they want to give you. So it's worth it. Interview them, ask them. We've interviewed dozens of exhibitors to just get their feedback on what are they looking for? And they all want ways to be able to showcase their content to a broader audience in a meaningful way.
Boom. Super mic drop moment right there. So incredible, Erica.
Pencil
drop moment right there. I know. I was just thinking about like my microphone's attached to my like desk. I can't drop it.
You can't have like that quintessential cool moment.
I know, like AirPod drop maybe.
Yeah. Can you just go like this? And
yeah. Exactly. Boom. Yeah, I love it. Well, Erica, this has been such an incredible conversation. I think you shared so many knowledge bombs with people to understand community more, the ROI they can get from it. What does it look like building this? Like, and especially the focus on the exhibitor side of things, which everybody's struggling with so much. So absolutely incredible conversation. Thank you so much for being on EventiCons today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. And I am open to questions, you know, after this event. If anybody has, you know, anything, feel free to reach out to me.
I love it. Well, thank you again, Erica. Thanks everyone watching live, all of our people watching the recording on all your favorite podcast platforms. You know what to do, but give us a shout. We're happy to have you as part of our community. And thanks everybody for watching today. I'm going to get out of here before I keep screwing up this outro. We'll see you guys all later next time on Event Icons.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Hashtag Event Icons. To catch all of the bonus content, resources mentioned, and an invite to our Facebook and LinkedIn groups, head to www.event-icons.com. Also, let us know what you thought about this week's episode, share your biggest takeaway, and just tag your social media posts with Hashtag Event Icons. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again soon, right here on Hashtag Event Icons.